The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, and I take it you are not football fans, basketball fans. Or I shouldn't have asked said anything. I guess there's a lot of people normally here who watch basketball or something, championship games. So this is nice. I like it when there's a smaller small group. It gives us a different opportunity. And what I'd like to do is to speak a little bit about thinking in a particular way, and then have some time for discussion about these ideas I'm going to present. So to do this, I'd like to begin with something that maybe is trying to be a poem. Like spiders, we spin threads of silk. Like spiders, we weave elaborate webs. Unlike spiders, we get caught in the webs we make. Thoughts are fine silk threads. Thinking is what weaves our webs. The stickiest webs are pleas and plots, fears and wraths, me versus you, me wants you. Fastening thoughts to our webs is how we get caught, and how we become both predator and prey for ourself. Each thread of thought is thin and weak, dissolving as it appears. 10,000 thoughts wrapped around each other make steel chains. Chains knotted together, impossible to untie, here to stay. But let the next thin, weightless, insubstantial thought fly by like you would allow a bird to fly through the sky. This is the painless, bloodless sword that cuts your Gordian knot. So, being mindful of thinking is a very useful part of meditation practice or Buddhist practice. And beginning to observe or see thoughts and have a different relationship to thoughts is central to becoming free. The path of Buddhist freedom in Buddhism has a lot to do with our relationships with thinking. And it's how we relate to thoughts, how we get involved in thoughts, the webs we spin with our thoughts, the ideas, the concepts we create, and then we inhabit worlds of our thinking, has a lot to do with how we get caught, how we get imprisoned in prisons of thoughts and ideas and concepts. And to begin to get a different relationship to thinking, to not invest in thinking as being that's where we solve all the issues of our life, to be able to recognize that there's also can be places of silence in the mind that can create a wonderful spaciousness around our thoughts. instead of our thinking being claustrophobic in the tight little space of the knots of thoughts that we create and spin and make happen. So we get caught in our webs. I like the idea that individual thoughts by itself are like fine silk threads, like they call, I've never touched, really felt carefully, I think, a spider web thread, but they call it silk, so I imagine it's, I guess it's sticky too, but it must be really smooth or something. And the spiders have little glands on their stomach where they exude, I don't know what it's called, exude, spin out these threads. And so it's almost like we have little glands in our brains, and their jobs are to spin out, to exude thoughts. And it's just what the brain does. So individual thoughts are just, fine, very thin silk threads. No problem. And one of the really fascinating things to become aware of is if you're, if you're not enmeshed in thoughts in the world of the web of it all, but if you're able to step back enough and have enough stillness or calm or mindfulness of the mind to watch thoughts appear, when they appear effortlessly, when thoughts occur and they come unbidden, there was no planning of them, there was no design for them to appear, it wasn't like you just set yourself up to think about something, you're just minding your own business, and suddenly the door opens up and your mind has a thought, well, that's a door. I wonder if I left my door at home open. That thought just kind of wafts through effortlessly. Then that might be the thought. And then, well, if I left the door open, it's really hot. The neighborhood raccoons might come in. They're clever. They probably find their way to the refrigerator. I think that, not only will the kitchen be a mess, but they might rip up, the inside of the refrigerator trying to get that wonderful chocolate cake I have in the back. And that's going to be a lot of work to clean up, and I might have to get a new refrigerator. And that's going to cost a lot of money, and I don't have a lot of money, and I better figure out how to make more money, and maybe I should get a new job. And so we start spinning first a web of this imaginary world of the door being open and what that means. And then we're involved and we're stuck in it. We're caught up and tied up in what it means and what we're going to do. And you spend the whole meditation session solving your work problems and finding a better job. And by the end of the meditation, you're going on Craigslist or someplace, looking for work. And you go home. And you find out the door's closed. And what was I doing? That was like a whole trip I took. I once took a trip like that. I mean, it wasn't continuous, but I think it was probably about 7 months that I was spinning this web and caught up in it. And it had to do with being the head cook at the monastery. I'd spent a year working in the monastery kitchen, and I was probably, at that point, the most skilled cook in the whole monastery, and poised to be the next head cook, the next season. It wasn't the head cook, it was a guest cook. So the people who make, when they have a guest season, the people who are going to cook for the guests. And so it was kind of a little bit wonderful job. And so I thought, of course they're going to choose me. When the guest season starts in April. And so I spent the winter, every time there was a meal, thinking about the recipe and thinking about menus and thinking about what I was going to do and planning ahead. And you're having meals in the monastery in your meditation posture, So you can meditate kind of around the meal, and when you finish eating, waiting for the food to be taken away and things like that, waiting for the food to come in. But I didn't meditate. I was thinking thoughts about the wonderful next season when I was going to be this cook. And so this went along merrily until it was time to announce. And they had a formal, almost ritual kind of way where they announced what everyone was in the meditation hall, standing there, and someone reads out the names and where you're being assigned. And lo and behold, I was not assigned to the kitchen. And when I didn't hear my name, I was assigned someplace else. I thought, what was I doing all those months? What a waste of time. It was like a powerful lesson, because like I looked back, wow, every meal I was caught in that web and repeating it and all that. And, you know, I could have been doing something useful with my time. I could have done something that, you know, I could have been meditating. And so I was caught in that web. But an individual thought, to watch how the first thought sometimes comes effortlessly. The first thought just appears. If you're able to see a thought arise and appear by itself, and you don't get involved, you don't pick it up, you don't add to it, you just watch it, then it has the nature of dissolving quickly. And there can be a feeling of freedom in relationship to it. And there can even be a sense of awe. Wow, this mind just does something. When I was in the same monastery, there was for a while I was kind of like the altar boy or something. I was the person who was ringing all these bells during the chanting that they do. And they had a special ceremony. They organized a kind of special ceremony. It was a kind of a show. They had visiting Japanese Zen master dignitaries coming to the monastery. So they wanted to show the Western students, you know, chanting and ringing bells and all that. So I was supposed to ring the bells and for this ceremony. And there is a particular sequence in which the chanting is done. And no one had told me that the sequence had been changed. So suddenly they started chanting, and I wasn't ready to do the bells and gongs and drums and stuff that had to be done, because I was taken by surprise. I was ready for something else. So I was slow to start. So, you know, eventually I started up. And then later the abbot came and talked to me about this, because it was, you know, his place, right? And he was showing off to the visiting priests. And so I explained to him, and all that got out of my mouth was, well, I wasn't thinking that you were going to. And he said, don't think. And I was a little bit perplexed by that, but I think his idea was that if I hadn't been thinking, I would have kind of spontaneously kind of joined along, or I would have picked up the change and just kind of just done it without, in an effortless way. But I see that often in my mind, that there's a lot of wisdom, there's a lot of understanding, a lot of wonderful things can happen in that part of the mind where the thoughts arise effortlessly. Oh, there they are. Well, that just happened. But to go around the day like that and trusting that mind, it's a quieter mind than many, you know, active discursive minds, but it's still an intelligent mind. Your intelligence is still there. You remember things and can figure out what to do, and you know, you kind of it tends to be a mind that's very much in the present moment, because if you watch just there to let the thought arise and then dissolve, you're just left here. Whereas, you know, if you're caught in a web of thoughts, then, you know, the web could be about the past and the future and preoccupation, and you're kind of in that world, as opposed to and to see how you can so much of our life in some conventional way can be taken care of in this place where the thoughts arise effortlessly. And so, I mean, there's probably all kinds of places you can experiment with this. I was putting the dishes in the dishwashing machine this evening, and there were those thoughts. You know, if you put it there on that side of the rack, you can get more. And that's the efficient place, and then you can put those over there. So very simple, innocent thoughts. I wasn't thinking them in terms of I was the one actively thinking and planning. And if I thought, you know, my family was watching and I was going to show them that I'm the best, you know, dishwash machine filler in the world, and then I'm really involved, then I'm caught in the web of something. But no one was in the kitchen, so there was no showing off. And it was just something that I do regularly, putting it in there, and I could watch that there were very simple thoughts. Some thoughts were so distant and quiet, and if I was involved in other thoughts, I wouldn't have even recognized that I was thinking. It's a kind of I would say I was on automatic pilot, putting the dishes in. But because I was somewhat quiet, I could see these very subtle, quiet thoughts just arise and pass. I wasn't doing them, but they were a little bit useful. They helped me line up the plates and stuff in a more efficient way. So what I'm trying to say is that there is a functioning of the mind that can happen that doesn't require your self-conscious involvement in thinking. If we're caught in thought, in the web of thoughts that we create, chances are very high is that we're self-consciously involved. We have desires and aversions, we want something, we're trying to get away from something, we're trying to make something happen, we're concerned about something. And a major player in all those concerns is me, myself and mine. And so it gets really sticky. And that stickiness makes it sometimes very hard to pull ourselves away from thinking. It's possible with a quiet enough mindful mind to feel the stickiness or to feel the gravitational pull into thoughts or to feel the push or the drive or the energy to be in thoughts, to be concerned with thoughts, to go to thoughts. And you see it, some meditators see it because, you know, you let go of your thoughts to try to go back to your breathing or be in the present moment. And then you, next thing you know, you're back in your thoughts. And you try again. And after a while, you can feel the energy of being pulled into it. Or maybe with a lot of effort, you try to stay on the breath and you could feel the pull or the attraction or even the interest or the lawyers of the mind coming along to debate saying, this is really important. You have to think this. And so you can feel that tug that's there, the stickiness that's there. You can feel how hard it is to pull away and the glue that might be there. I don't know if those metaphors of stickiness and glue work for you, but you can feel a little bit that relationship that you have with the thoughts that keep you engaged, keep you caught in it. And I think for people who haven't done some kind of meditation or really kind of studied their mind carefully, it can be very compelling to think, because that's all we have. It's the only kind of tool we kind of maybe have to figure things out and to solve problems and to get ahead and to, you know, get pleasure or distract ourselves from our difficulties or whatever, all kinds of reasons we think. And so it's serving a purpose, and we have the idea this purpose is really important. It's really important to do these things. The promise of thought, if I think it through, I bet a fair number of you have ruminated around the same kind of concern over and over and over again. And you only do it because some part of you believes that somehow, if you do it, you'll get a solution. Somehow, something will happen. And, you know, if I just think about menus and recipes for 6 months, you know, somehow I'll end up being the cook. And so this can go on and on and on. So some of these kind of webs of thoughts that we get caught in are labyrinths, or maybe not labyrinths, labyrinths or more, I guess, mazes. They're maze. We go into the maze, and it's very hard to find our way out. especially if we're trying to think our way out. Because we're still in the maze if we're thinking. We're still in the web if we're thinking. And so sometimes it can feel impossible to get out by ourselves. And that's why some people will do dramatic things, or not so dramatic things, to distract themselves because their thinking mind is so painful and so insistent and incessant. And so some people will, you know, do alcohol and drugs to somehow break the cycle of those kinds of difficult thinking. Some people will do all kinds of recreational things, sometimes sex, sometimes exercise, sometimes watching movies or something, just to get out of their own mind. And because it's so difficult in there. In the path of mindfulness, we're learning to look at that directly and learn to relax. And relax the mind, relax the tension, relax that pull or that drive, that investment we make in the world of thoughts, so we can have a very different relationship with thinking and not have it so sticky, not to be so pulled into their webs and caught in those webs. We spin our own webs that we get caught in. And it can seem, as the poem says, we get a lot of these thoughts, you know, coming together, and they don't feel like thin, weak little threads. But when all these thoughts go fast and furious or come all together, have been building for, you know, years, and kind of weaving this fantastic web, they feel like they're hard and solid, like steel chains. And they tie themselves in knots. And it can seem impossible to break them. People don't even know how to get into them or find their way in them. And so the poem has this very simple way, the sword that cuts the Gordian knot, the painless, bloodless sword. Isn't that nice? And that has to, if you're able to discover how to see thoughts arise effortlessly and not get involved, and just like you watch a bird go through the sky, you allow it to go through the sky. You don't stop it. You don't put your hand up and say stop. You don't hold on to it. You don't throw, you know, sticky glue, long threads of sticky glue on them or something. You just kind of, they just go through. In terms of your mind, the birds go through the mind, kind of through the sky of the mind, sky of awareness. They just go through, and there's no effort, nothing for you in there. And so to let the thoughts go through the sky of the mind and just fly away, disappear. Don't be involved. Don't pick it up. Don't add thoughts to them. Just watch. There they go. And to watch those effortless thoughts appear and glide through and dissolve. Just to really observe that, that cuts the knot. That puts you on the other side, or that puts you apart from this whole complex web and knots that thinking creates. And then trust, really trust that mind that was able to watch the thoughts arise effortlessly. It's the mind, the awareness, that can watch that happen. That's where freedom begins to be found. Right there. It's not very dramatic. It's not very promising. Or it doesn't seem very... It might seem out of scale with the tremendous importance of these webs of thoughts that we have to think and the important things our life have to do. It's very humble, it's very simple, it's very maybe soft. To just the mind that's able to watch, the mind that's like the sky that the bird goes through, the mind that goes, oh, that's a thought. It arises and it dissolves. To trust that awareness. And then, if you can go through your days trusting that awareness, you might be able to discover the joy and the amusement and the wisdom and the specialness of having a whole watching all these effortless thoughts arise that take care of you and help you find your way. And there might be some times when you have to intentionally think and get engaged. It's not a crime to think, you know. It's okay. But to be able to kind of have this effortless quality support you, guide you, be a source of understanding in you, and, you know, and just, wow, there's something else operating here that's supporting me that is not me in terms of the usual me that I identify and hold myself as being me. It's still coming out of you, but it's not the you that we kind of have created this wonderful, we've ensnared in our webs. And perhaps the self that Buddhism is talking about unwinding, dissolving, is just a complicated web, spider web, that we've spun for ourselves. And so to pull out the threads and let it all unravel is freedom. So that's maybe more than I wanted to say, longer than I wanted to say. I don't know if this makes sense to you, all of you, or I think that to be able to really see and track thoughts and see what's going on there is a foreign thing for some people, that they haven't learned it. But that's something that comes over time as you do mindfulness practice and keep meditating and start looking at this and start seeing there's actually a very radical different way of living that for some people is a revolution in their minds, a life that's not rooted or centered in thinking. You can still think, but it's not centered on it. But centered more in this awareness, they can see the arising and dissolving of thoughts and make lots of room for this effortless place of thinking to occur. One of the advantages of this is that if we're caught up in the web of thinking a lot, there's not a lot of room for other forms of thoughts to arise. If you have quiet in the mind, and so you have enough of this, when watch track the effortless thoughts arise, all kinds of things can appear. You'll be surprised what arises and what shows itself and what informs you. It's actually a richer, bigger world to live in that world. So we spin the webs that we ourselves get caught in. And to step back and watch the next thought arise effortlessly is maybe how we dissolve the web. Do you have anything in your life, you have any experience, any history with thinking, where you recognize for yourself, yes, that time, 20 years ago, last week, this afternoon, I spun a web of thoughts and ideas and all that, and then I lived in it, I was caught in it, I was trapped in it, I couldn't pull myself out. Do you have any experience of that? And what was that like? And how did you get out? And do you have any experience of what I'm talking about having an effortless thought arise, where it didn't really seem like it was you, but you weren't channeling anybody either. It was you. It was clearly, you know, your mind. But it was a quieter voice maybe, or a quieter projector or something, and it just came and was there. And do you have anything that in your experience that you can relate to what I've been trying to say today? So what I'd like to ask you to do is to maybe form little groups of three or four people, and you don't have to share anything that's too personal, but why don't you share if anything that you have any personal experience to what I'm talking about?